In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vien and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Bob Barsha, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio, Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to your Sunday night with Speed City. This is John Massengill. I'm joined by two of the most iconic voices in motorsport, Jonathan Green, here in the studio with me, and from the Varsha Broadcast Campus in Atlanta, the voice of all American F1 fans know and love, Bob Barsha. Hey, Bob. It's been about 3 weeks since I've seen you. I guess, since the Belgian Grand Prix at Spa. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well now. I'm doing a lot better. I came home from the Nashville IndyCar weekend where I worked on the SRO race and came home with a bug that has taken me about 2 weeks to shake, but I'm a lot better than I was this time a week ago. Thanks for asking.
Well, tonight, we're being talking Formula One and all sorts of motorsports, but because Mr. Green spent the weekend shipping champagne and nibbling on caviar.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed.
I may have got a sandwich once in a moment. But going back to Nashville, wasn't that a great event, Bob? It was horrible and humid and wet and rainy, but boy, they're pulling it off. I mean, they've got to start all over again because they're moving the Titan Stadium, and now they're going to take it down Broadway, which is going to be interesting to see a bunch of bachelorettes taking on the IndyCar drivers and a bunch of bars with blues pouring out of them. But
Mayhem. They definitely have momentum on their side. I mean, yeah. IndyCar is obviously behind them. They want to hold their final event, their season-ending banquet there, which sounds like a great idea there in the home of country music. I'm reminded of my old Formula E colleague, Jack Nicholls, who came 2 years ago to the walk around and
get to know
Nashville.
Yeah, I saw him.
And I said to him, well, what'd you think? Did you go down to Broadway? And he said, yes. And I have to say, I have never seen so many people dressing the way they were, but not ironically.
But he would have
all
said
the
it
cowboy
like,
hats.
Yes, I really enjoyed it, but I was quite surprised to see them not dressed ironically.
With all the cowgirls?
Yeah, I know. Exactly. It is a bit of a caricature, isn't it?
That's funny.
It is, but it's fun.
Yeah.
Well, I was talking about Jonathan being out at Monterey.
Yes.
And we're going to hear all about the classic race cars on track.
Wow,
and
Bob's
all
done it many times.
And Bob's done it too. And there was the auctions, the at least three auctions, I guess, if you count the Meekum.
Oh, no.
Six, seven.
Yeah. Yeah, between me and Bob, we've got both sides covered because he does the good stuff, the champagne swigging stuff. Well, I know he doesn't do that, but I mean, the auctions and the Pebble Beach Concours d'Elegance, all that kind of stuff. And I do the sort of nitty gritty end of the weekend sort of racing where they come up and you see some fabulous cars that have either been auctioned that year or years before. But we go through the entire history. It's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it really is. It's a spectacular event. And with regard to the auctions in particular, it's got to be the biggest event this side of auction week in January in Scottsdale, Arizona, where they all gather because the money's in town.
Yeah.
And that's when all the big auctions, all the RM Sotheby's and the what am I trying to say?
There are multiple auctions, you mean?
Meekham
Gooding.
Meekham Gooding is the name I was trying to think of. You know, the really sharp guys. And of course, Barrett Jackson.
Yeah.
Just thousands upon thousands of cars from the sublime to the ridiculous. And that's all over Monterey as well.
Well, just to give you an idea, and Bob, you're aware of this, there were at the racetrack for the weekend 400 entry cars. Now, not 400 drivers, because several drivers take two or three cars.
Right, yeah.
But 400 cars entered and, you know, given the stamp of approval, 200.
And that's in the racing, though.
Yeah,
on track.
In the racing, yes. On track, in 14 different groups. There were 200, so 600 cars in all applied, that were told, sorry, can't fit you in this year.
Wow.
And most of them would have been homologated and, you know, true to the authenticity, which is required for those events to go on.
Yep.
So that just tells you how tough it is.
It's a real gathering of the clans. And we're not talking about supercars or, you know, Indy 500 winners or that kind of stuff. There are, you know, brass era antiques and all kinds of stuff going around the racetrack. If you're into the history of the automobile, boy, it is there in spades.
It's the kind of event where if you took your daughter, for example, you know, she's at an age now where she might be interested in learning what interests you. In one day, you could take her to a 1908 Ford Packard or a Packard or I don't know, an Indy racer,
a steam car or whatever,
kind of. Because the ragtime guys are out there. Our first car on track was an early Grand Prix 1927 Bugatti, all the way through to that Gordon Murray in 2023, and the new Corvette and the new E-Ray.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember doing a feature on a car. It was Alfa Romeo 8C, you know, whatever it was. It was an ex Nuvolari race winning Grand Prix car. You know, and I stood there and I looked at this thing and all the hand craftsmanship that went into it, and I choked up. I thought, you know, Nuvolari has been gone for decades, but here's the car. It's still here.
Yeah.
And that's true. You know, go up and down the rows. And guys like Jonathan and John, you know, you can look at car after car and say, I remember that car when it was a winner. I remember a race in which they did this. I remember who drove that car. You know, it's just such a huge dream come true just to walk around and walk down memory lane and see all these cars.
Well,
lovingly.
And this year we had something that I've been dreaming of for a while, which is Can-Am and Formula 5000, two different groups. So we had something like 20 Formula 5000. Interestingly enough, and Bob will back me up here, you always think of 5000 as an American championship. Well, it wasn't. It was a worldwide championship. And there were like five or six entries from Australia and New Zealand who brought their cars over.
I was really listening to that because I didn't know Can-Am very well. And I was like, I wanted to hear the history of it. Yeah. I didn't really know the history
of Zach Brown. This is interesting.
I'm much
Zach Brown,
than you.
I know. Zach Brown drove a Formula One car that he owns, which is an Alan Jones winning World Championship F07
Big flat billiard board looking thing.
Lovely. But it's his car, which always seems odd because he's the CEO of McLaren. But he also drove Bruce McLaren's first Can Am car, all bright orange, papaya orange,
maybe that's
obviously.
The one I was.
That was
the M8D.
That's the one. Yeah. So wonderful.
And did you see the picture floating around the internet today?
Yes.
I think Zach posted it of Zach sitting with Jim Farley from Ford.
Yes.
We had one Adrian Newey wearing a McLaren cap sitting there having dinner with these guys. Now, if that's not going to set off,
I know
he's wagging all over Formula One. I don't know what will.
Well, it was very funny when I got the entry list and I saw Adrian was coming. I was like, I wonder what he's going to drive. And I was like, duh, he's going to drive a GT40, his own.
Yes.
Of course he's going to drive
some
a Ford.
Great cars. Yep.
Yeah, I saw that. And in fact, I clicked it. And before I even read the headline, and I saw Adrian Newey wearing a McLaren hat. And I was like, hang on a minute. And then I looked across the table and saw Zach Brown wearing a Red Bull hat. I was okay.
They swapped hats.
I see what
got
happened.
Got it now.
Here.
Yeah.
Too much fun.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was, and Zach Brown just kind of like, you could just feel the they like, I'm ruling the roost right now because McLaren's doing so good and he's doing so good in IndyCar and he's driving those cars.
Well, except
for the story we're going to talk about later tonight.
About Alex Palou.
Yeah,
that's a different story. There. Yeah. And in fact, they're selling. So just to put some footnotes, McLaren's celebrating 60th, their 60th anniversary this year since Bruce McLaren formed the company. And Corvette were there as the centerpiece to celebrate 70 years of Corvette.
Yes. I noticed that I watched the beginning of the Concours d'Elegance at Pebble Beach that came on at like 3 o'clock Austin time. Mm-hmm. And they started off and they had the beautiful scenery and they said, and celebrating anniversaries this weekend. And I was going, oh yeah, Corvette too. And they went McLaren 60th, Lamborghini 60th, Porsche 75th. No mention at that particular event.
Whoa.
Well, it's not really a Corvette event.
No.
And I just thought it was funny that they didn't mention
You to the Corvette guys.
Oh, did you really?
Well, because I said, you know, when you come to America for the first time, when you grow up in England, nobody talks about, what does it get to the wheel? You know, what are you getting there? You know, nobody talks about the power of the engine and how many horsepower you're going to get. Because we grew up with Minis and Escorts. Come on. You know, it's all small displacements, so no one cares. It's all about styling and elegance and, that beautiful Italian machine. And listen to the roar of that Ferrari.
Right. It's all right there in the name. Concours d'Elegance.
Yeah.
It's a car that has that special something. Doesn't mean it'll go 10 zillion miles an hour.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it costs $10 zillion. It's just a car that you look at and it speaks to you. And that's what the judges are asked to find in each of the classes that they judge. Where's the car that speaks to everybody? And it's great fun, I have to say.
One thing that I love, a kind of footnote again, was when you start getting, you know, when you spend time over in Monterey and you get to know the real history, because Laguna Seca didn't open until 57. Mm-hmm. So it was an interesting period.
I learned that during your broadcast.
Yeah, when tracks were being made, like Road America and Watkins Glen and so on and so forth, because up until that point, it was Sebring and many other airfields. Sebring's still going,
right,
but most of the other airfields disappeared, except Sebring, which is ironic. But anyway, the first winner of a race in Pebble Beach and in Monterey was actually a Jaguar imported from the UK, but driven by one Phil Hill, you may have heard of.
Yeah. The Pebble Beach road races.
Now, wait a minute. This was 1957?
No, 1950.
Oh, okay.
They ran 5 years of races
before
around
the track.
Yeah, before the track was built.
Okay, because when you said 57, I was thinking about the 1957 Jaguar XKSS.
Yes.
Which was a super lightweight and one of those
That was a very special car.
Yeah, a really unique car. And one of those sold at the auction, one of the auctions out there, I think it was Sotheby's or whatever it is, for $13 million. Dollars.
But you talk about the fact that it's not all big stars, you know, which it isn't. You're certainly not racing driver stars. But for example, Aaron Shelby was there. You know, Tatum, if you know your historic racing, the son of the maker of the Tatum car was there. And these are all specials that were kind of built here in California and around America that were either copies or amalgamations. And of course, there was Cobras there, which of course is the opposite, which is an amalgamation of a British car, an AC and a Cobra from Shelby.
Did you know that the first year they ran both the Pebble Beach road races and the Concours, and one followed the other by a few years, Phil Hill completed the sweep. He won the road race.
Wow.
And then a car that he had restored won the Concours. So, you know, he swept up the girl and the check and the trophy and put his cars on the trailer and said, see ya, folks.
That's
one
brilliant.
Of my favorite Phil Hill stories. But you're right, Jonathan, that this is when racetracks were being built, mainly because the road races that preceded them were killing people.
Yeah, they were.
Watkins Glen, Road America, Monterey. You know, you just can't run on public roads when the cars get to a certain danger level.
Yeah.
And so it was.
All right. Well, let's get a quick break in. And when we come back, we have a little more to talk about. We're going to talk about what car we would buy at one of these auctions if we had $1 million.
Oh.
Listen, you're starting out with Speed City back after this.
As a rider, you know what you like. The power, the feel, the ride. When it comes to gear, you know what keeps you safe. Ducati Austin provides riders with the finest in day and easy leathers, the best the market offers. Visit Ducati Austin on Breaker Lane just east of I-35 and throw your leg over the most iconic sports bike ever built. Ducati. Even take it for a test ride or see what's been described as art on wheels from MV Agusta. You know what you like. See it at Ducati Austin. Online at DucatiAustin.com.
Winding Road Racing is your first and best choice for all the essentials for a great weekend at the track. We're racers, and we love helping racers. With a full selection of racing gear in stock, get geared up with all the safety equipment needed to meet all the latest Snell, FIA, and SFI regulations. Outfit your car with a comprehensive lineup of racing necessities, and when you need to find a few more tents, turn to data acquisition systems from AIM Sports, V-Box, and others. Austin-based with shops in California, Georgia, and Kentucky. The source for all your racing needs. Winding Road Racing. WindingRoadRacing.com.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, starting with the true crimes that inspired Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello to everyone, this is Gunther Steiner, this is Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, welcome back. And when I went to the break, I did forgot to tease something because we have a couple of interviews that Jonathan got while he was out in Monterey. We're going to hear from...
Well, it's actually my cohort got the interview.
Oh, that's right.
I was stuck in the booth.
He was doing a good job for you, by the way.
Kevin yeah. Harris, lovely man.
Yeah, and so let's see, which are those, Jonathan?
The one I really like is Peter Brock.
Window.
Because one of the first things you taught me was the split screen Corvette of 1963. Split window of 1963. And you got all excited about it, and I was like, well, what's the significance? Because I mean, obviously, I love a Corvette. I was like, well, they only did it for 1 year, and I was like, aha.
I didn't really know.
And most people, that's where most people stop. And so this was a chance for me to learn and for our audience to learn who penned it, who kind of came up with it, and the story behind why it was only made for 1 year, and interestingly enough, it wasn't the big bosses of Corvette that said, oh, we've got this great idea. It was an intern.
Well, you know what? Let's play that one now, and we'll come back to our auction dream cars.
Here's Kev Harris.
The man that started all with the famous split window all those years ago, it was 1957, Peter. I understand you're an intern at GM.
That's correct.
You're downstairs in a little office that nobody really knows about, and somebody walks in that office and says, can someone design me a car? Well, and the rest is history.
Well, Bill Mitchell had just taken over as director of styling. And, of course, the whole Corvette program had been canceled by General Motors because there was an agreement with the Aircon Manufacturers Association. They were all going to quit racing. digital missile. The car guy with gasoline in his veins, he said, no way, we're going to continue the car. So they couldn't do the project upstairs in the official Chevrolet studio. So he came down where the interns were working, where I was, and there were three of us down there, and he explained what he wanted to do, laid out some pictures. He'd seen some cars that influenced him from the Deterrent show, and he selected my work off the wall. And we've got the original sketch done in 1957, and the car has not changed hardly a line. It took 6 years from that sketch to the time it was finally done, and that says a lot for the power of Bill Mitchell to stay in that direction, and also for the timelessness of the design. So the design has become a real classic, and it's fantastic to be a part of it under Bill Mitchell.
Absolutely. I mean, what a great story as well. And just cast your mind back to that time. You said there was three of you down there in that office as interns.
Yeah, yeah.
The other two guys, I mean, was it a friendly environment? Was there a bit of competitive rivalry
or how was it? We're all top designers, great guys, and we all worked together on the project. And, of course, you know, when they put the stuff up on the wall, Mitchell walked around and he liked what I had done. And that turned out to be the direction that we went. At that point, he gave me the direction to do the thing full size in clay. And at that point, then I got to refine it even more. And that was very interesting because I designed it without the split window in it. So the car was completely done, and Mitchell came in and said, you know, I want to split the window on it. So we split the window on it. At that point, Zora Dunsoff came in and said, what is this? We cannot have this. This is stupid, you know. So he got in a big fight with Mitchell over the split window. And finally, Mitchell threw him out of styling, said, you go back to engineering. This is styling. This is my car. I'm going to do it the way I want. So Zora went to Ed Cole, who was the vice president for Chevrolet, complained about it. So Cole brought Mitchell and Zora Dunsop, sat him down, and they both argued what they were going to do. And he said, okay, this is what we're going to do. He says, Bill, he says, I know how important it is aesthetically to have the split window. We're going to let you have that for 1 year, and then we're going to put a single window in the back like Zora wants. So that's why we have the split window in only 1 year, because it was Bill Mitchell's aesthetic design to do it that way.
What a fantastic story. And I don't know if many people know that, but I mean, for 1 year, and then it's become such an icon. And what's it like for you, Peter, when you walk across the way to that Corvette awning over there, and there's all different generations of Corvettes lined up, right up to the brand new one that's part electric, part internal combustion engine now? What's it like for you as a designer to look across that heritage of vehicles?
Well, it's incredible, because seeing it, the whole thing from the, because of the Mitchell era started the real Corvette thing. Obviously, Harley Earl started with the 53 stuff, but the real Corvette came in with Zora Dunsoff and Bill Mitchell, and a great set of engineering and design, and it kept getting better and better and better. And to be, you know, remembered as part of the beginning of that whole tradition of great Corvettes, it's been a real honor, just a tremendous thing. And so I see what they're doing now. It's probably the best engineered car in the world, you know, and to be able to go out in the dealership and buy that car for about one third of the highest priced supercars in the world, that's really an honor.
Yeah, Bob.
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
you know, it's.
Go ahead.
That's not a real rare phenomenon. That we were just listening to, the idea of a 1 year only.
Yeah.
Because in 4 years later, in 1967, the Corvette had what was known as the Stinger hood, which was a beautiful hood scoop with a sort of spearhead going out the front. 1 year only, 67. That's a dead giveaway as to what you're looking at.
Amazing. And I love stories like that, though.
I know, that's a fantastic.
Oh, yeah, turn bandit. An intern bandit.
And hearing it from the horse's mouth, you know.
Yeah, all those beautiful concept cars that were developed, a lot of them from clay models, as we just heard, were crushed. They wouldn't let them out the door, just make them disappear.
Yeah, yeah.
And a million years ago at Barrett Jackson, a car came across the block. It was an Oldsmobile, sort of a Corvette clone. It was a two-seat roadster, concept car for Oldsmobile. And the story was that it was slated to be crushed, but a group of guys, and here we go with all the you know, cloak and dagger stuff again at GM, they took it apart during their work days, one part after another, got snuck out the back door, and they put it together somewhere else. The car existed. It sold for like $2 million or something, and I think it just changed hands again this weekend at Pebble Beach or at one of the associated auctions. So that's I just love right. this kind of stuff.
There's one of my
love it.
One of my favorites is the Chrysler Turbine car that it escaped. There's like four or something like that. And Jonathan, I don't know if you know this car, but it's actually powered by a jet engine. and Chrysler made it, and they only made like I don't know 10 or something, Bob. I don't remember, but. Jay Leno
who
has
drove
one.
It, Sammy Hagar.
Well, and it was not really ready for the road. It worked, though. Leno drove his on his show.
That's
and,
wild.
But yeah.
Well, hell, they raced turbines at Indianapolis.
Yeah.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's a great example.
Yeah, I love those stories. I actually got a great, I went to the revival of the Nassau Speed Weeks, once again, a million years
Bahamas,
ago.
Bahamas, yeah.
And yeah, in the Bahamas, and I got a great interview with Zora Arcus Duntoff, very late in life, but he was just as lively as he could be. He could be, you know, hard-nosed, and then he said, well, you know, we built six Grand Sport Corvettes to race around the world, and all 12 of them are here this weekend, and went on with those kinds of jokes. Spent 20 minutes with the guy, great interview, couldn't wait to listen back. My cameraman looks at me and says, I didn't get the audio.
We've all been there.
Him.
That's a firing.
I buried him at sea.
Yes, I hope so. There's a few audio men down there.
That reminds me of the first time I ever interviewed Mario Andretti. I had my sound, my sound gear all set up, and I went, as I was walking over there, I went, just in case, I grabbed my iPhone and I hit the record button. I slid it behind my microphone.
Smart move.
And I had screwed up the good gear, but my iPhone was there. Saved my butt. Hey, speaking of Corvettes.
God bless Apple.
Jonathan, they had at least three of the SERV Corvettes. And the SERV Corvettes were these prototypes. They were, you know, concept cars that never made it to production. And you know what they were? They were mid-engine.
Yes.
Sound familiar?
Yeah.
The new C8.
They finally did it.
You know the story now after this weekend. But yeah, I was looking. In fact, we've got one of those in the clips folder, Casey. That's the one that I remember that Casey has that we're showing. It was the it was like around late 80s, early 90s. It was a SERV 3, I think. And one of the engines they put in that one was the Lotus design Mercury Marine built LT5 dual overhead cam 32-valve Corvette engine that nobody knows that was ever made, right? That you know, that all Corvette engines were push rods and two valves. And I had a couple of those ER1s, and I even had one at a car show, and somebody said, why'd you swap that good old American V8 out for that dual overhead cam? And I was like, no, this came from the factory. But yeah, those, that actually happened to me. I was like, no, that came with the car. I promise you. But
little knowledge is a terrible thing.
Yes, exactly. But you know, speaking of American muscle cars, Jonathan, did you get to see? I know they had it there, and I know you're in the booth. I know you. I'm sure you didn't. But they had the new Mustang GTD there. They had something like a prototype or something, right? Was it there?
Definitely it was there, yeah. And in fact, we got an interview with Jim Farley about it, the CEO of Ford, about it. And it was funny because we could have run that, and we can run it next week if you like, but we've got that interview with Jim where he basically says, you know, why should we let Aston Martin have all the fun? We're coming back, and we're gonna bring this racing, and we're going racing back and forward, and we're going to bring this new GT3. It's going to be beautiful.
That one, Bob, did your eyebrows raise like mine when you saw the price tag of a Mustang?
Yes. Honesty compels me to admit $300,000 sounds like a lot of money, but I don't know all the details of the car. I haven't seen the performance parameters. I don't know what it's going to do, but that's still a lot of money.
Well, I have some of that. First of all, it's going to be a 800 plus horsepower.
Yeah.
Supercharged 5.2 liter. Yes.
Yeah.
But really, it's not all about the horsepower in this case, actually, unlike most Mustangs. It's a race car.
Yeah.
You know, it's inspired by the GT3 car that they're they're putting out right now. And it's got a dual clutch automatic, it's got, racing suspension. It's a race car.
All the bells and whistles. Yeah.
And they're going to put it in IMSA. I mean, they're going racing.
Yeah. And I don't, I don't think that exact car.
No.
But it's kind of the opposite of what you think of IMSA, where, some of the, especially like GT4 level, where it's a street car, they strip it out and they put race suspension and race, bespoke everything. Well, this is almost like the opposite. They start with a GT3 car, make it a street car.
I mean, Ford's racing history is exceptional, no question.
Yeah.
Going all the way back to the turn of the 20th century. But I will say the Mustang, which came to life as a, America's sporty car, although Mike Joy will tell you it was sort of a Susie Secretary car at the start because it was a 260 cubic inch engine, kind of gutless, whatever, but cute and fun. And then it got into the performance vein and you went on to the Boss Mustangs and so on. But Ford has not raced the Mustang. And don't start me on NASCAR Cup racing and how those are Mustangs. They're not.
Yeah, or Trans Am.
to race that Mustang is something Ford's never really done. And so I'm delighted to see they're going to take that car after, 60 years of Mustang existence and actually make it into a race car and, go take on the world. I love it.
Mm. Yeah, it's true. It's funny. We hadn't really thought about it, but that's a really good point. You think of the Mustang has been their highest performing car for the street outside of the GT, the GT40 and the GT. You think, why wouldn't they have ever raced that? But yeah, it's about time, right? Yeah. All right, let's get a quick break in. When we come back, we got some Formula One stories. We got some Formula One / IndyCar stories that we're going to talk about. You're listening to Sunday Night with Speed City. Back after this. Hey guys, we are very excited to welcome our new sponsor, Allstop Brewery, to Speed City. These guys make a fantastic beer, and I'm going to let Jonathan talk about it, but I'm going to tell you about it. When I tasted it, I am not a big beer aficionado. I like a nice cold beer, but I'm always worried about a craft beer or a new beer that it's going to have a funky taste, especially aftertaste. This beer was fantastic. I have absolutely no qualms at all that this is my new favorite beer. But Jonathan, you know why, what makes it so special, the water and the recipe?
Well, yeah, I mean, these guys have done their research and do it right. And they've even imported the right water to do it right. I mean, I tell you, this Allstadt beer, fantastic. And I'm, most Europeans are snobs about their beer. And I'm definitely one of those. Because
you're definitely a snob?
Yes, okay. About my beer.
Okay.
because there's no question, carbonation has always been my issue here in the States. It's overcarbonated, and our lagers, our pilsners and lagers in Europe, especially German ones, are not that heavily carbonated, and that's a key thing. And that's the first thing that hit me was just how well they've done the beer. It's based out of Fredericksburg. It's got a great tie-in because obviously Fredericksburg, a German town, and now they've got a Texas German beer, and it's cracking.
Yeah, and the facility out there, it's amazing. They've really done it right. It's really fantastic. So check it out. You can get it at all the local HEBs and everything else, right?
Yep. It's all around Texas. You can get it. They sell it on the shelf there as a Texas beer. But I'll tell you what, you're right back in Germany when you drink it.
And it's Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com. Altstadt Beer, Altstadt Beer.com.
Hi, this is Jay Leno from JayLenosGarage.com, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Bob, you know where I learned about the Citroën Doshivo?
On
Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
I think good place to learn.
I think the comedian was the French comedian Gad. I can't remember his last name, but that's. That line was from Seinfeld, one cylinder, one for each, for me, one for you.
Yeah, I love those cars. They used to run 24-hour races for those cars over in Europe. There was a car show, out in the church parking lot here in Atlanta, where I met a guy who had a Doshivo. You talk about one cylinder for the driver, one for the passenger. He had an engine for the driver and an engine for the passenger. It was a twin engine Deux-Chevaux. And so, you know, you see maybe one here and there around the country. My wife and I lived in Paris for about 6 months back in 2018. And I was walking through the city one day, and I came upon this tour launch point. And it was a tour that took you around Paris in Deux-Chevaux. And there was like 30 of them all lined up by the curb, all shiny and looking great. And I thought, damn, what would it take for me to stick one of those in my pocket and wander off?
The guy, the comedian that Seinfeld had on was, let's see, it's Gad Elmaleh, I think, something like that. But he said in France, those cars, they were like driven by nuns. He said that was the joke because they were super practical and, you know, two cylinders. But anyway, that's the history of that car.
It was all post-war stuff. They didn't have materials. They didn't have fuel, yada, yada, yada. Didn't Peter Sellers drive one in one of the...
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
I don't know that, but that sounds about right for Inspector Clouseau.
That would be just the car to drive. Yeah.
Hey,
I want one.
Hey, guys, let's talk a little bit of Formula One and motorsports. Let's start with a story that's a crossover between Formula One and IndyCar. And, Bob, I thought about you when I saw this story because of your jurisprudence background. But because of
prudential.
Alex Palou is back in the silly season news. This is crazy, Bob.
It's absolutely crazy. Now, I don't know all the ins and outs, so who am I to judge? But for Alex Palou to sign two contracts with two different teams twice is just mind-boggling to me. I thought it was crazy who was the Formula One driver who did it? I can't remember now. Jean Alesi.
Yes.
Ferrari he did. And Williams 1 year. Yeah, but this is nuts. I'll tell you a story. I was leaving the Formula E race at Berlin years and years ago, and the Mexican driver, Esteban Gutierrez, had just announced he was walking away from his Formula E ride. And I was in a car going back to the hotel with Dario Franchitti, my colleague, and his manager, Julian Jacoby.
Yes.
Who is perhaps the most influential and respected manager in motorsports.
He played a role with the center at one point, didn't he, I think?
Oh, yeah. Senna, Prost, you name it. He's got this litany of great driver clients. And I said to him, you know, this news about Gutierrez, what's going on? And he just looked at me and shook his head and he said, the kid is destroying his own career. Mm-hmm. You cannot walk away from a contract and expect to, you know, have any kind of a career. Mm-hmm. And thus it's kind of been for Esteban, who is a good kid. But I think he just got bad information. And somehow I get the sense that that's what's happening with Alex Palou, who did the deal with Ganassi and with McLaren. And now he's turned away from McLaren and everybody's mad and everybody's suing. And his
management,
original management team, right, was it Monaco Increase Management, said, we're out. I don't know what he's doing. This is crazy. Good luck, pal. We're gone.
So
his previous manager, a guy named Roger Yasukawa, is picking him up. But
Bob, can you confirm with me in the audience what I think is the correct procedure, which is he was due to drive with Ganassi this year with a view to going to McLaren in 24. That was what all parties believed, and that is what was negotiated by his Monaco management team, but he's been going pretty well in Ganassi and now has changed his mind and wants to stay at Ganassi. And quite rightly, Zak Brown is, hang on a minute, he's been doing our testing program and we were going to get him, you know,
they gave him money too.
They gave him an advance on his salary. Yeah.
And obviously gave him a testing program. Deal,
yeah. He signed a contract with McLaren for 2023. Ganassi objected. Negotiating took place. Okay, Ganassi can keep him for 2023. We as McLaren get him in 2024. And now, as you say, he's killing everybody in 2023. He's probably going to win another championship. Apparently, Ganassi has offered him a very unchip-like contract offer of, you know, eye-popping salary.
Well, all right.
So I don't know if it's just youthful exuberance
or bad advice.
Well, let me ask about the elephant in the room then. I mean, I agree with what you said about Esteban, and it could be the same for Pelot here. But with Piastri and Norris, where's the room for Alex? And I mean, he must be looking at this going, well, Piastri really is the real deal and has proved it.
Yes.
Norris is not going anywhere. So where would, if Alex did fulfill that contract for 24, he would literally get maybe the odd Friday drive, right?
Yep. He was lined up for three Friday drives, as I recall, plus the whole McLaren, you know, old car testing program that he was going to do with Piastri. I think, and I don't know again, but I think the idea was he would sign for McLaren, counting on the fact that either Lando or Piastri would clear space for him. Either Piastri would fall on his face, or Lando would be picked up by another team should a
Hamilton.
Red Bull want to replace Sergio,
and so on,
that there would be a place for him with a good team.
Well, I'm starting to think that Alex's Pelot's got it right.
In what way?
In that is his best option is to stay on a decent salary at Ganassi.
Yeah, no question.
Well, okay,
no
so think about it. Think about it, guys. He's going to win this championship for the first time since over a decade before the end of the season, right?
And it's his second championship.
Oh, yeah. Right. And
no question about it.
And so the highest paid IndyCar drivers are around $6.5 million. I think it's Herta and Scott Dixon are around $6.5 million.
Yeah.
You know, to get to that kind of level in Formula One, you're going to be top 10. Mm-hmm. Now, not including, you know, endorsements and all that other stuff, but salary, you're top 10 to get to close to, you know, above $5 million. And so he probably is smarter just financially to stay, you know, from a career standpoint, you can always say, I missed that. I didn't go to Formula One. But it's so hard. You can be the best of the best and still look. Alonso had trouble finding the right seat.
Been the drawback of why he's only got two titles. Yep. I would argue is that
the cold shower is you can't do a deal and then get down the road and say,
yes,
you know what, that didn't work out the way I thought it was going to. So I'm done. I'm not going to honor the contract now. So now I think what's going to happen is they're going to go back and sort of unwind the whole thing and say, okay, Chip has already said, Alex has always been contracted to us. And I don't know what the length of the Ganassi contract was, but obviously another year or two, I would think. And then, you know, McLaren, if it is decided that Ganassi's contract was valid, then McLaren's contract couldn't be. And so, you know, the whole thing kind of collapses on itself. It's going to cost Alex Pelot a lot of money.
He's a 26-year-old.
You know, and the sad thing is, it might hurt the career of an obviously very talented guy.
Yeah.
And that's,
I still think he's young enough to for people to vie on his talents to bring them. I also think that if I want to connect the dots, and correct me if you don't agree, that the emergence of returning Ricciardo with a possibility of now taking Perez's seat has changed, has been part of that process in Pelot's mind or management's mind. That sort of what you said, that shift of somebody like Norris or Piastri being picked up as Verstappen's next teammate, and now Ricciardo being in the picture potentially. Gosh, done one race, but you know, I think that's all right. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. This is crazy.
Nuts. It's exciting.
Yeah. All right. Let's get our last break in really quick, and we'll be back with your Sunday Night with Speed City.
Mo- Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project MotoGP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at MotivationUSA.com. That's MotivationUSA.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters. VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Hi, this is Karun Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we were continuing. If you don't know, we continue during the breaks on YouTube if you're listening on the radio. But, Bob, you were talking about a pre-contract. That sounds kind of like you're pre-pregnant. What exactly is a pre-contract?
Well, it's a device that's been used before in Formula One, and it's another way of securing a driver's future. And it's just what it sounds like. It's sort of an agreement that the parties will come together if certain things happen. And those could be any number of different things. A rumor flew recently that Carlos Sainz, of whom we've heard a lot with regard to the, you know, the bruised feelings at Ferrari, if that's the case, Charles Leclerc has said, no, it's all blown out of proportion. But I'm not sure Carlos Sainz is as happy as he could be at Ferrari. He's already said Ferrari can expect not to be on the podium unless they take a step up. So he's putting the lash to the team. But if, in fact, he has signed a pre-contract with another team, doesn't mean he's committed to them unless a certain number of things happen. And, you know, that's lawyers being creative, I suppose. And that's something that Alex Palou, I think, could have done. If he wanted to sort of cover his bases, you know, I want to be in this team at that time, if everything goes well, yada, yada, yada. His Ganassi contract has to end at some point unless he just decides to sweep everything away in front of him and do another deal with Chip. Or he could structure his future without signing a contract that says, I'm definitely going here on this date and so on. It's... I think it could have been handled differently. And again, it all comes back to the fact that I think, you know, this great talent is being poorly advised.
Poorly advised, right,
yeah.
Exactly. And this company, Monaco Increase Management, they released a statement. They are pretty much doing what we're talking about. They're saying, you have scorched earth. And there's, because the statement says, Monaco Increase Management is bitterly disappointed to learn about Alex Palou's decision to break an existing agreement with McLaren and beyond.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, Sag Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Jay Leno from JayLenoGarage.com, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
Bob, you know where I learned about the Citroën Doshivo?
On nope.
Jerry Seinfeld's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee.
I think good place to learn.
I think the comedian was the French comedian Gad. I can't remember his last name, but that line was from Seinfeld. One cylinder, one for each, for me, one for you.
Yeah, I love those cars. You know, they used to run 24-hour races for those cars over in Europe. There was a car show, you know, out in the church parking lot here in Atlanta, where I met a guy who had a Doshivo. You talk about one cylinder for the driver, one for the passenger. He had an engine for the driver and an engine for the passenger. It was a twin engine Doshivo. And so, you know, you see maybe one here and there around the country. My wife and I lived in Paris for about 6 months back in 2018. Then I was walking through the city one day, and I came upon this tour launch point, and it was a tour that took you around Paris in Doshivos. And there was like 30 of them all lined up by the curb, all shiny and looking great. And I thought, damn, what would it take for me to stick one of those in my pocket and wander off?
The guy, the comedian that Seinfeld had on was, let's see, it's Gad Elmaleh, I think, something like that. But he said in France, those cars, they were like driven by nuns. He said that was the joke because they were super practical and, you know, two cylinders. But anyway, that's the history of that car.
It was all post-war stuff. They didn't have materials. They didn't have fuel, yada, yada, yada. Didn't Peter Sellers drive one in one of the...
That sounds about right.
Yeah, I think he did, yeah.
I don't know that, but that sounds about right for Inspector Clouseau.
That would be just the car to drive. Yeah.
Hey,
I want one.
Hey, guys, let's talk a little bit of Formula One and motorsports. Let's start with a story that's a crossover between Formula One and IndyCar. And, Bob, I thought about you when I saw this story because of your jurisprudence background. But because of
prudential.
Alex Palou is back in the silly season news. This is crazy, Bob.
It's absolutely crazy. Now, I don't know all the ins and outs, so who am I to judge? But for Alex Palou to sign two contracts with two different teams twice is just mind-boggling to me. I thought it was crazy who was the Formula One driver who did it? I can't remember now. Jean Alesi.
Yes.
With
yes,
Ferrari
he did. Yeah.
And Williams 1 year. Yeah, but this is nuts. I'll tell you a story. I was leaving the Formula E race at Berlin years and years ago, and the Mexican driver, Esteban Gutierrez, had just announced he was walking away from his Formula E ride. And I was in a car going back to the hotel with Dario Franchitti, my colleague, and his manager, Julian Jacoby.
Yes.
Who is perhaps the most influential and respected manager in motorsports.
He played a role with Senna at one point, didn't he, I think?
Oh, yeah. Senna, Prost, you name it. He's got this litany of great driver clients. And I said to him, you know, this news about Gutierrez, what's going on? And he just looked at me and shook his head and he said, the kid is destroying his own career. Mm-hmm. You cannot walk away from a contract and expect to, you know, have any kind of a career. Mm-hmm. And thus it's kind of been for Esteban, who is a good kid. But I think he just got bad information. And somehow I get the sense that that's what's happening with Alex Palou, who did the deal with Ganassi and with McLaren. And now he's turned away from McLaren and everybody's mad and everybody's suing. And his
management,
original management team, right? Was it Monaco Increase?
Yep.
management said, we're out. I don't know what he's doing. This is crazy. Good luck, pal. We're gone. So his previous manager, a guy named Roger Yasukawa, is picking him up. But
Bob, can you confirm with me in the audience what I think is the correct procedure, which is he was due to drive with Ganassi this year with a view to going to McLaren in 24. That was what all parties believed, and that is what was negotiated by his Monaco management team. But he's been going pretty well in Ganassi and now has changed his mind and wants to stay at Ganassi. And quite rightly, Zach Brown is, hang on a minute, he's been doing our testing program and we were going to get him, you know.
They gave him money too.
And they gave him money too.
They gave him an advance on his salary, yeah.
And obviously gave him a testing program. Deal,
yeah, he signed a contract with McLaren for 2023. Ganassi objected. Negotiating took place. Okay, Ganassi can keep him for 2023. We as McLaren get him in 2024. And now, as you say, he's killing everybody in 2023. He's probably going to win another championship. Apparently, Ganassi has offered him a very unchip-like contract offer of, you know, eye-popping salary.
All right.
So I don't know if it's just youthful exuberance.
Or bad advice.
Well, let me ask about the elephant in the room then. I mean, I agree with what you said about Esteban, and it could be the same for Pelot here. But with Piastri and Norris, where's the room for Alex? And I mean, he must be looking at this going, well, Piastri really is the real deal and has proved it.
Yes.
Norris is not going anywhere. So where would – if Alex did – fulfill that contract for 24, he would literally get maybe the odd Friday drive, right?
Yep. He was lined up for three Friday drives, as I recall, plus the whole McLaren, you know, old car testing program that he was going to do with Piastri. I think, and I don't know again, but I think the idea was he would sign for McLaren, counting on the fact that either Lando or Piastri would clear space for him. Either Piastri would fall on his face, or Lando would be picked up by another team. Should a
Hamilton,
Hamilton, Red Bull want to replace Sergio,
and so on,
that there would be a place for him with a good team.
Well, I'm starting to think that Alex's Pelot's got it right.
In what way?
In that is his best option is to stay on a decent salary at Ganassi.
Yeah, no question.
Well, okay, so think about it. Think about it, guys. He's going to win this championship for the first time since over a decade before the end of the season, right? Before the final race.
That's his second championship.
Oh, yeah. Right. And
no question about it.
And so the highest paid IndyCar drivers are around $6.5 million. I think it's Herta and Scott Dixon are around $6.5 million.
Yeah.
You know, to get to that kind of level in Formula One, you're going to be top 10. Mm-hmm. Now, not including, you know, endorsements and all that other stuff, but salary, you're top 10 to get to close to, you know, above $5 million. And so he probably is smarter just financially to stay, you know, from a career standpoint, you can always say, I missed that. I didn't go to Formula One. But it's so hard. You can be the best of the best and still look. Alonso had trouble finding the right seat. We've seen that before.
The drawback of why he's only got two titles, I would argue, is that the reality,
the cold shower is you can't do a deal and then get down the road and say,
yes,
you know what, that didn't work out the way I thought it was going to. So I'm done. I'm not going to honor the contract now. So now I think what's going to happen is they're going to go back and sort of unwind the whole thing and say, okay, Chip has already said, Alex has always been contracted to us. And I don't know what the length of the Ganassi contract was, but obviously another year or two, I would think. And then, you know, McLaren, if it is decided that Ganassi's contract was valid, then McLaren's contract couldn't be. And so, you know, the whole thing kind of collapses on itself. It's going to cost Alex Pelot a lot of money.
He's a 26-year-old.
The sad thing is, it might hurt the career of an obviously very talented guy.
Yeah.
And that's,
I still think he's young enough to for people to vie on his talents to bring them. I also think that if I want to connect the dots, and correct me if you don't agree, that the emergence of returning Ricciardo with a possibility of now taking Perez's seat has changed, has been part of the of that process in Pelot's mind or management's mind. That sort of what you said, that shift of somebody like Norris or Piastri being picked up as Verstappen's next teammate, and now Ricciardo being in the picture potentially. Gosh, done one race, but you know, I think that's all right. But you know what I mean?
Yeah. This is crazy.
Nuts. It's exciting.
Yeah. All right. Let's get our last break in really quick, and we'll be back with your Sunday Night with Speed City.
Motivation USA, catering to the sport bike enthusiast looking for truly unique parts and accessories. Stand out from the crowd. Motivation is the exclusive North American distributor for SC Project Moto GP inspired exhausts and the largest Rizoma retailer in the United States. Get the best parts from around the world at the best prices with fast shipping and a knowledgeable staff ready to help. Shop online 24/7 at motivationusa.com. That's motivationusa.com.
If you want to know where the path to Formula One and Indy begins, it's three simple letters, VRD. VRD Racing of Atlanta, Georgia are dedicated to nurturing young, single-seater drivers on their quest to the pinnacle of motorsport. Having just wrapped up the team's championship title in 2021 in the F4 US Championship, they also have programs in FR Americas, the all-new USF Juniors, and the Road to Indy. VRD is the perfect environment for success. To join the team, drop them a DM on Instagram at velocity_RD.
Hi, this is Karun Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we were continuing. If you don't know, we continue during the breaks on YouTube if you're listening on the radio. But, Bob, you were talking about a pre-contract. That sounds kind of like you're pre-pregnant. What exactly is a pre-contract?
Well, it's a device that's been used before in Formula One, and it's another way of securing a driver's future. And it's just what it sounds like. It's sort of an agreement that the parties will come together if certain things happen. And those could be any number of different things. A rumor flew recently that Carlos Sainz, of whom we've heard a lot with regard to the, you know, the bruised feelings at Ferrari, if that's the case. Charles Leclerc has said, no, it's all blown out of proportion. But I'm not sure Carlos Sainz is as happy as he could be at Ferrari. He's already said Ferrari can expect not to be on the podium unless they take a step up. So he's putting the lash to the team. But if, in fact, he has signed a pre-contract with another team, doesn't mean he's committed to them unless a certain number of things happened. And, you know, that's lawyers being creative, I suppose. And that's something that Alex Palou, I think, could have done if he wanted to sort of cover his bases. You know, I want to be in this team at that time, if everything goes well, yada, yada, yada. His Ganassi contract has to end at some point, unless he just decides to sweep everything away in front of him and do another deal with Chip. Or he could structure his future without signing a contract that says, I'm definitely going here on this date, and so on. It's... I think it could have been handled differently. And again, it all comes back to the fact that I think, you know, this great talent is being poorly advised.
Poorly advised, right, yeah. Exactly. And this company, Monaco Increase Management, they released a statement. They are pretty much doing what we're talking about. They're saying, you have scorched earth. And there's, because the statement says, Monaco Increase Management is bitterly disappointed to learn about Alex Palou's decision to break an existing agreement with McLaren and beyond. I mean, they basically came out and threw him under the bus and said, if you're another management company and that, you know, this is what this kid does. Mm-hmm. So
I have to say, though,
that implies that he did it without
that knowledge,
informing his management.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
I have to say, though, the one true thing about motor racing is if you are the champion of Indy, you've got a lot more ducks on the table than most. And if you are a two-time champion, yeah, exactly. If you're a two-time champion of Indy, then even better. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think he's going to be not in the limelight.
Hey, before we go into some more F1 stories, I wanted to pivot back because sports cars, we're talking about them all for half the show. But we have a tie-in with Formula One because COTA announced that they are, if you're in the area, and this is probably, I don't care where I lived, if I was in the United States and I had a cool muscle car, they're looking for cars to put into the driver's parade in here in Austin. So if you have a cool muscle car, 1-800-COTA. No, I don't know what the phone number is. They reach out to them on whatever, on their website probably, because they've got a post about it. What do they say? Oh, it says driversparade@thecircuit.com. They said send your submissions today.
Can I borrow your car, John?
Well, they're actually looking for 1960s and 70s convertibles because so the drivers can sit on the back, obviously.
I have to say, one thing COTA might consider in the future, and this is just throwing it out there, but with the money and the amount of historic cars just in Texas alone, you could have an amazing festival of cars.
Oh, you don't have to leave Austin to fill this entire 20 cars, 20 muscle cars from the 60s and 70s. I know one building where you could do that in North Austin.
Yeah, we both do.
Wouldn't it be fun if, you know, one of us involved with the radio show could be driving, you know, the driver parade car, and we're talking with Lewis or we're talking with Fernando or we're talking with whoever it is. So what do you think? That would be cool.
I like your thinking, Bob.
I'll put you forward for it, Bob. I like it.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. What other Formula One stories we got in here? Jonathan, did we talk about the DRS, possible DRS ban last week? I saved that story.
Yeah, we did. We touched upon it, but Bob wasn't here. So I really respect getting his
take on it, because this is your baby. You're really wanting this to happen.
Because they're talking about, well, first of all, Bob, that I've been banging on about, I'm fed up with DRS, because the whole idea of changing the cars to have the more downforce and all the rest of it, and all the rule changes that were put in were to make the racing closer. And that has happened. But the DRS is still there, and I'm still now starting to think whether we actually really need it. And this story, which pricked my interest, was the fact that they were going to get rid of it for qualifying. And we then went into a discussion about whether, okay, well, do we look towards curtailing it at least, where you're only, let's say, allowed to use it a bit like the Indy Boost, only 10 times, for example, or over a period of a Grand Prix, and you save it for when you need it, or you save it to get away from the guy chasing you. And then it becomes a tactical situation rather than this sort of what I would call pedestrian. Well, I'm not going to overtake you here because you're just going to overtake me in the next DRS zone, which I feel is starting to become part of modern Formula One. And I just think that the whole point was to get the cars closer together, give them a chance to race closer and take opportunity to pass. And I just think that DRS has had its day.
That's a very plausible opinion. I know Graham Rahal was particularly caustic about the DRS. He much prefers the push to pass to have an Indy car, but I think there may be other motivations there as well. I saw an interesting suggestion on the social media. Someone said, well, let's flip the script. How about if you can use your DRS until you get to the back of the car within 1 second that you want to pass, then you lose it.
Right.
That goes back to the original goal of DRS, that it wasn't to pass. Right. It was
to get closer.
Close it up.
Yeah, to close the gap.
See, I'd be happier with that.
That was intriguing.
Yeah, I'd be happier with that.
I'm thinking,
I like that idea, actually.
I like both of them. I'm thinking, I don't know. I think right now, instinctively, I like the limitation, because it is kind of cool to it adds a bit of strategy to how much, you know, push to pass and Indy you have left, or if you had an X amount left, whether it was number of times or amount of seconds with the DRS open. So I don't know. I mean, either way, it's I do like something, though. I think we should do something, and I think there's something that, you know, that could be done to make it more exciting, because it's really,
well,
it's not right now.
I kind of fall more into the purist category, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. I think there's a real danger in assisting people who haven't done as good a job as the guys they're chasing. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to build a competitive car. And, you know, if you weren't able to do it, well, get used to finishing
last
14th.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
I don't think you can artificially close things up.
And that's the word, isn't it? It's artificial.
Yeah, artificial.
We call it motor racing. It's we don't call it exciting things that happen.
Right. No, you go racing.
I'm going to start a new series that's called that, Exciting Things That Can Happen.
Well, you know, I'm sort of guilty of it, but, you know, Crofty's going, oh, and it's a great overtake. And, you know,
well, that's his job, but you're right.
It's artificial.
You're right.
But you look at some of those overtakes and you go, really, was that really that exciting? Because it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just a DRS move.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'm not blaming Crofty because that's his job. But
So speaking of artificial things, the next story I wanted to talk about was Bobby Epstein was interviewed by the folks at motorsport.com. And they were talking about the glitz and glamour of Miami and Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, everybody's come full circle with COTA now, it feels like, because now COTA is the purest. COTA is the real racing. COTA is the iconic. It seems crazy.
What are you saying? We got no glitz and glamour?
Well, not compared to
Austin,
Vegas,
Texas,
for sure.
Baby.
Come on, Austin, Texas, baby. And we got all right.
But yeah, Bobby was, there's a couple quotes in this motorsport.com story. He said, we don't need to change our recipe. It's really working. Mm-hmm. And he's right now, 440,000 last year and 400,000 the year before that. Of course, those 2 years, you could have had a Formula One race just about anywhere. You could have, but that's not to take anything away from COTA, because they have, the last two years, they have figured it all out. Everything, every complaint, whatever.
And I would argue that whatever happens in the next 20 years, COTA has managed to create its own Watkins Glen. And what I mean by that is that Watkins drivers used to love going to Watkins, still do, but for Formula One, love to go to Watkins Glen because it was a great race course.
Yep.
And I think COTA has that going for it, both on two and four wheels. And that is why that's its secret sauce, really. And of course, Austin's a great town, don't get me wrong. But what I'm getting at is it doesn't need to suddenly do something artificial like create a glamour and have a prize with diamonds and a Red Bull party that's like no other, or put fake yachts in Lady Bird Lake, whatever. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's got something special, and it's the track itself.
Yeah. And this article's really good.
I agree.
I think Bobby
has a long-term vision. Bobby has a long-term vision, and I think as it plays out, we'll see that he does know what he's doing, or he's getting great advice from people who know how to do this. Austin, I don't need to tell you guys, is very distinctive from Miami, from Las Vegas.
Mm.
So, you know.
And it has none of the pretense of those two places.
Right, exactly. We're not building anything. What you see is what you get. And that includes a concert with Ed Sheeran or Taylor Swift or
Queen and the Killers.
When do we get Aerosmith? I want to see Aerosmith.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, talking of good advice, tip my hat again to Bobby Epstein for employing Andy Suchek. Not somebody I would have immediately picked out of a hat as a motorsport director. When you know his career and you know who he knows and who he goes out to play with of a weekend, i.e. in WEC, because he's still very much involved in sports car racing and motor racing, brilliant choice to be at COTA.
And Bobby says, by the way, be careful. Let me go back to this article. Bobby says, I was listening to a podcast, he says, and he said all they mentioned was Vegas and Miami. I hope that wasn't us.
I don't think it would be.
No, I don't think it would be either. And by the way, you can hear every radio show we do as a podcast on your favorite podcast.
Look at my shirt.
I know, we both have COTA shirts on tonight. Yeah.
Austin's got, you know, the best possible offering for that weekend, and that's Austin itself.
I was going to say, Vegas
and
Miami.
Vegas is great.
Yeah.
And Miami is great, but they're not Austin.
Austin's got it's special too. I would say that. So
yeah, and it's funny. You spent a lot of the opening years sort of going to, you know, asking waiters or wherever we were in Austin because you wanted your town to know about this new thing. But the truth is that actually doesn't matter. Look at the journalists that stay here for 3 days before going to Mexico because they want to be here. They want to get barbecue. They want to hang out.
All right, boys, we are out of time. Thanks everybody for tuning in. We're back to Formula One. I know this hour flew by. We're back to Formula One this weekend, and so we'll start on Saturday. But go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, and check out all the ways to watch and listen and all that. And, of course, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and, I don't know, maybe some other ones. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Happy trails.
Cheers.
That 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In-app only.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Range. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, we're Corinne Vienne and Sabrina Deanna Roga here to introduce our newest podcast, Crimes Of, a Crime House original.
Crimes Of is a weekly series that explores a new theme each season, from crimes of the paranormal, unsolved murders, and more. Our first season is Crimes Of Infamy, the true crime stories behind Hollywood's most iconic horror villains.
Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is Karun Chandok, and you're listening to Speed City.
Welcome back to the fastest hour in radio, Speed City.
All right, we were continuing. If you don't know, we continue during the breaks on YouTube if you're listening on the radio. But, Bob, you were talking about a pre-contract. That sounds kind of like you're pre-pregnant. What exactly is a pre-contract?
Well, it's a device that's been used before in Formula One, and it's another way of securing a driver's future. And it's just what it sounds like. It's sort of an agreement that the parties will come together if certain things happen. And those could be any number of different things. A rumor flew recently that Carlos Sainz, of whom we've heard a lot with regard to the, you know, the bruised feelings at Ferrari, if that's the case. Charles Leclerc has said, no, it's all blown out of proportion. But I'm not sure Carlos Sainz is as happy as he could be at Ferrari. He's already said Ferrari can expect not to be on the podium unless they take a step up. So he's putting the lash to the team. But if, in fact, he has signed a pre-contract with another team, doesn't mean he's committed to them unless a certain number of things happened. And, you know, that's lawyers being creative, I suppose. And that's something that Alex Palou, I think, could have done if he wanted to sort of cover his bases. You know, I want to be in this team at that time, if everything goes well, yada, yada, yada. His Ganassi contract has to end at some point, unless he just decides to sweep everything away in front of him and do another deal with Chip. Or he could structure his future without signing a contract that says, I'm definitely going here on this date, and so on. It's, I think it could have been handled differently. And again, it all comes back to the fact that I think, you know, this great talent is being poorly advised.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And this company, Monaco Increase Management, they released a statement. They are pretty much doing what we're talking about. They're saying you have scorched earth. And there's, because the statement says, Monaco Increase Management is bitterly disappointed to learn about Alex Palou's decision to break an existing agreement with McLaren and beyond. I mean, they basically came out and threw him under the bus and said, if you're another management company, and that, you know, this is what this kid does. Mm-hmm. So
I have to say, though,
that implies that he did it without
that knowledge,
informing his management.
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
I have to say, though, the one true thing about motor racing is if you are the champion of Indy, you've got a lot more ducks on the table than most. And if you are
you
a two-time champion,
yeah,
exactly. If you're a two-time champion of Indy, then even better. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I don't think he's going to be not in the limelight.
Hey, before we go into some more F1 stories, I wanted to pivot back because sports cars, we're talking about them all for half the show. But we have a tie-in with Formula One because COTA announced that they are, if you're in the area, and this is probably, I don't care where I lived, if I was in the United States and I had a cool muscle car, they're looking for cars to put into the driver's parade in, here in Austin. So if you have a cool muscle car, 1-800-COTA. No, I don't know what the phone number is. They reach out to them on whatever, on their website probably, because they've got a post about it. What do they say? Oh, it says driversparade@thecircuit.com. They said send your submissions today.
Can I borrow your car, John?
Well, they're actually looking for 1960s and 70s convertibles because so the drivers can sit on the back, obviously.
I have to say, one thing COTA might consider in the future, and this is just throwing it out there, but with the money and the amount of historic cars just in Texas alone, you could have an amazing festival of cars.
Oh, you don't have to leave Austin to fill this entire 20 cars, 20 muscle cars from the 60s and 70s. I know one building where you could do that
exactly.
In North Austin.
Yeah, we both do.
wouldn't it be fun if, you know, one of us involved with the radio show could be driving, you know, the driver parade car, and we're talking with Lewis or we're talking with Fernando or we're talking with whoever it is. So what do you think? That would be cool.
I like your thinking, Bob.
I'll put you forward for it, Bob. I like it.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see. What other Formula One stories we got in here? Jonathan, did we talk about the DRS, possible DRS ban last week? I saved that story.
Yeah, we did. We touched upon it, but Bob wasn't here. So I really respect getting his take on it.
Yeah, get his take on it because this is your baby. You're really wanting this to happen.
Because they're talking about, well, first of all, Bob, that you know I've been banging on about I'm fed up with DRS because the whole idea of changing the cars to have the more downforce and all the rest of it and all the rule changes that were put in were to make the racing closer. And that has happened. But the DRS is still there, and I'm still now starting to think whether we actually really need it. And this story, which pricked my interest, was the fact that they were going to get rid of it for qualifying. And we then went into a discussion about whether, okay, well, do we look towards curtailing it at least, where you're only, let's say, allowed to use it a bit like the Indy Boost, only 10 times, for example, or... you know, over a period of a Grand Prix, and you save it for when you need it, or you save it to get away from the guy chasing you. And then it becomes a tactical situation rather than this sort of what I would call pedestrian. Well, I'm not going to overtake you here because you're just going to overtake me in the next DRS zone, which I feel is starting to become part of modern Formula One. And I just think that the whole point was to get the cars closer together, give them a chance to race closer and take opportunity to pass. And I just think that DRS has had its day.
That's a very plausible opinion. I know Graham Rahal was particularly caustic about the DRS. He much prefers the push to pass to have an Indy car, but I think there may be other motivations there as well. I saw an interesting suggestion on the social media. Someone said, well, let's flip the script. How about if you can use your DRS until you get to the back of the car within 1 second that you want to pass, then you lose it.
Right. That goes back to the original goal of DRS, that it wasn't to pass. Right.
It was to get
close
closer.
It up.
Yeah, to close right. the gap.
See, I'd be happier with that.
That was intriguing.
Yeah, I'd be happier with that.
Hmm. I'm thinking,
I like that idea, actually.
I like both of them. I'm thinking, I don't know. I think right now, instinctively, I like the limitation because it is kind of cool to it adds a bit of strategy to how much, you know, push to pass and into you have left, or if you had an X amount left, whether it was number of times or amount of seconds with the DRS open. So I don't know. I mean, either way, it's I do like something, though. I think we should do something, and I think there's something that, you know, that could be done to make it more exciting, because it's really, well, it's not right now.
I kind of fall more into the purist category, I guess, for lack of a better phrase. I think there's a real danger in assisting people who haven't done as good a job as the guys they're chasing. You know, it's as simple as that.
Yeah,
to me.
You
know, you're supposed to build a competitive car. And, you know, if you weren't able to do it, well, get used to finishing
last
14th.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree.
I don't think you can artificially close things up.
And that's the word, isn't it? It's artificial.
Yeah. Artificial.
We call it motor racing. We don't call it exciting things that happen.
Right. No, you go racing.
I'm going to start a new series that's called that, exciting things that can happen.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sort of guilty of it, but you know, Crofty's going, oh, and it's a great overtake, and you know,
well, that's his job. But
I know
right,
it's his
job.
But,
right.
But you look at some of those overtakes and you go, really, was that really that exciting? Because it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just a DRS right. move.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I'm not blaming Crofty because that's his job. But
Speaking of artificial things, the next story I wanted to talk about was Bobby Epstein was interviewed by the folks at Motorsport.com. And they were talking about the glitz and glamour of Miami and Vegas.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, everybody's come full circle with COTA now, it feels like, because now COTA is the purest. COTA is the real racing. COTA is the iconic. It seems crazy.
What are you saying? We got no glitz and glamour?
Well, not compared to
Austin,
Vegas,
Texas,
for sure.
Baby.
Come on, Austin, Texas, baby. And we got all right, all right, all right.
But yeah, Bobby was, there's a couple quotes in this Motorsport.com story. He said, we don't need to change our recipe. It's really working. Mm-hmm. And he's right now, 440,000 last year and 400,000 the year before that. Of course, those 2 years, you could have had a Formula One race just about anywhere. You could have, but that's not to take anything away from COTA, because they have, the last two years, they have figured it all out. Everything, every complaint, whatever.
And I would argue that whatever happens in the next 20 years, COTA has managed to create its own Watkins Glen. And what I mean by that is that Watkins drivers used to love going to Watkins, still do, but for Formula One, love to go to Watkins Glen because it was a great race course.
Yep.
And I think COTA has that going for it, both on two and four wheels. And that is why that's its secret sauce, really. And of course, Austin's a great town, don't get me wrong. But what I'm getting at is it doesn't need to suddenly do something artificial like create a glamour and have a prize with diamonds and a Red Bull party that's like no other, or put fake yachts in Lady Bird Lake, whatever. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think it's got something special, and it's the track itself.
Yeah. And this article's really good.
I agree.
He
I think
go ahead,
Bobby has a long-term vision. Bobby has a long-term vision, and I think it as it plays out, we'll see that he does know what he's doing, or he's getting great advice from people who know how to do this. Austin, I don't need to tell you guys, is very distinctive from Miami, from Las Vegas. Mm. So, you know.
And it has none of the pretense of those two places.
Right, exactly. We're not building anything. What you see is what you get. And that includes a concert with Ed Sheeran or Taylor Swift or
Queen Killers. And the Killers.
When do we get Aerosmith? I want to see Aerosmith.
Yeah, I agree. By the way, talking of good advice, tip my hat again to Bobby Epstein for employing Andy Suchek. Not somebody I would have immediately picked out of a hat as a motorsport director. When you know his career and you know who he knows and who he goes out to play with of a weekend, i.e. in WEC, because he's still very much involved in sports car racing and motor racing, brilliant choice to be at COTA.
And Bobby says, by the way, be careful. Let me go back to this article. Bobby says, I was listening to a podcast, he says, and he said all they mentioned was Vegas and Miami. I hope that wasn't us.
I don't think it would be.
No, I don't think it would be either. And by the way, you can hear every radio show we do as a podcast on your favorite podcast.
Look at my shirt.
I know, we both have COTA shirts on tonight. Yeah.
Austin's got, you know, the best possible offering for that weekend, and that's Austin itself.
I was going to say, Vegas,
sure,
and Miami.
Vegas is great.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Miami is great, but they're not Austin.
Austin's got, it's special too, I would say that, so.
Yeah, and it's funny, you spent a lot of the opening years sort of going to, you know, asking waiters or wherever we were in Austin because you wanted your town to know about this new thing. But the truth is, that actually doesn't matter. Look at the journalists that stay here for 3 days before going to Mexico because they want to be here. They want to get barbecue. They want to hang out.
All right, boys, we are out of time. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We're back to Formula One. I know, this hour flew by. We're back to Formula One this weekend, and so we'll start on Saturday. But go to our website, speedcitybroadcast.com, and check out all the ways to watch and listen and all that. And, of course, follow us on Twitter and Facebook and, I don't know, maybe some other ones. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Happy trails.
Cheers.
Across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
My new podcast, Crimes Of, explores the forces behind some of the most unforgettable crimes in history. Listen to and follow Crimes Of, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
there was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.